Cold here. Russell, welcome all the way from Ukraine. So great to have you. So we are on an international call today. Let me just dive in and kind of welcome everybody. We are talking today for another one of our Multiply Vineyard webinars about pastoring, planting, and parenting. That is the big key today. We're adding in the mix of what is it like to be a parent, to parent children, while you're doing this other high calling, that is planting a church and doing ministry. And we have some tremendous pastors who I'm going to introduce in a second on the call with us. But let me just say one little thing. We're on our Zoom platform here. And so we want your interaction. This is not a YouTube video. This isn't a recorded thing. As everybody's jumped in the chat window already, we just want to hear lots of questions. We want to hear engagement. We'll be kind of asking along the way for those questions. We're not going to save a lot of time at the end. You don't need to write down your questions to save this time. Just shout them out via the chat window or the Q&A window and function there. That'd be the best spot to put them. One way we're going to ask for your interaction right away is we just want to know a little bit more about you. I'm going to launch a poll here. So right on the front of your screen, you should see this poll. We're just asking you two questions. What is your ministry role right now? Are you discerning your calling? Are you a church planter or are you a pastor? Are you doing the work right now? And then because we're talking about parenting, we'd love to know just, do you have kids currently? Is that part of your setup right now where you're pastoring and planting and also have some kids? I do. I have two little ones. We have a one-year-old and a three-year-old. So this conversation for me, even though I'm here kind of in the host seat, I'm just going to sit and learn with everybody else who's on the call from these folks who are doing it. As I'm letting you guys fill that poll out, I just want to introduce you to our panelists here. We have John and Arlita Arelli. They're the pastors of Mission Vineyard Church in San Antonio, Texas. They also serve with some few roles on our Multiply Vineyard team. John is one of our regional reps for all of the South Central region. So that's kind of Louisiana, part of Texas, South Central U.S. And Arlita works serving all of our church planters as our process coordinator. So if you come into the system in our church planting, you will get pastored by Arlita, and she will help you through the process along the way. Hi, Arelis. Great to have you with us. How are things in San Antonio today?
Cold, rainy, and that for us is like 45.
Right. Great. Arlita, how are you today as well?
I'm doing well.
Awesome.
It's rainy. It's nice. It's different, and it's not normally rainy in San Antonio.
We like the rain here.
And we also have the Hinmans on the call with us, Lissa and David Hinman. These guys also from the South, this time in the Southwest. They are in Gilbert, Arizona. They've planted a church down there. Now they're on staff at the Gilbert Vineyard. David's on staff as one of their associate pastors. Lissa works through the church there as well. And also serve in roles with Multiply Vineyard. David is working with all the church planters regionally in the Southwest. Lissa, you're often working sort of with women who are coming in and discerning church planting call. As women pastoring and thinking about planting. We're really excited to have you guys on the call. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So as we dive in, I'm just going to end our call here, or end our little poll, and share the results. I'm not going to end the call yet. That's a little too soon. We're only 6 minutes in. And I shared the results. We have most of our folks, 42% of us, are church planters in the room. That's awesome. About another third are pastors, and 37% are discerning your calling. Welcome, folks who are still discerning and figuring out what could be next and if planting is next. And then everybody on the call who voted it has kids. So this call hopefully is right on for your scenario, your setup, where you're at right now in life. And the folks who are these pastors on here, we really feel like we got some good stuff to offer. And we're looking forward to the conversation there. Isaiah is asking, why does it say 111% of us? I think that's because a few people clicked more than once. I think you could keep clicking. So, or maybe if you have more than one kid, I don't know. So maybe that's adding percentage points to it. So as we get going here, I want to hear just from each of you a little more of your story. So I've just like talked you guys up saying, hey, you're pastors, you're planters, and you have kids. But what did that look like? What has it looked like? And we'll start with the Hinmans. For you guys, as you were starting to plant, tell us about your family life and how you kind of went into planting while also having kids.
I'll let you start.
All right. Well, we planted while our kids were in elementary age. They were about second grade, sixth grade, and eighth grade. And we decided that it was something that David and I were called to, and since our children were a part of that, that they were called to it also. Yeah.
And we planted about 14 miles or maybe a little bit more than that from the Sending Church in the Southeast Valley of Phoenix in kind of a new community. And so one of the challenges was that our children had to adjust to a whole new community and a new place with different people.
And kind of, as I talked to you guys about it, your kids were really sort of in grade school age, right? And they were, you weren't planting with real young kids. You also didn't have kids who were in college yet. They were in those grade school years. What was it like having grade schoolers as you were discerning and then in the plant?
Right. Well, our oldest son was in eighth grade or seventh grade at the time we were making a decision, and he was really knitted into his home church, the church that sent us out, and it was very difficult for him. He didn't like the idea of having to move at that point and start all over again.
And one of the things that he told us when we initially started to decide to plant, he said, if you're going to do this, I'm never going to be a part of the church. I'm not even going to go. And he really gave us a difficult time initially. But now that he's like 26 years old, living in Denver, he has told us, he goes, Mom and Dad, that was the best thing that we ever did as a family. And now actually he's actually being trained as a church planter at the Mile High Vineyard.
That's awesome.
That was a challenge, obviously, with him especially, because he was older than the other children.
Yeah, and Lissa, you said, like, part of that was, hey, you feel called to this as a family, and so part of it was maybe even helping those kids kind of in on the discernment process, right? Of sort of right. Like, hey, we need to give Jordan some time to get used to this idea as before we just pull him out of his church, which is all his support system in his community.
Right. And we really did encourage him to pray and ask the Lord what God was speaking to him personally. And although he resisted initially, by the time we were moving out of our house and going to plant, he had decided that it was something that God had also called him to and that he was going to help in any way that he could. And he took that very seriously.
That's awesome. And now you guys are also proud grandparents, we've heard, right? And so you are in the phase of you've done the planting and pastoring, and these kids now are adults. And like you said, Jordan's training to be a church planter, and now your grandma and grandpa. How old's your little grandbaby now?
He's 10 months old today. 10 months old.
Awesome. Awesome. John and Arlita, you guys are kind of on the other end of the spectrum where you guys went in with real young kids, and your kids are still kind of young. Tell us a little bit of that story of how you guys discerned and started planting with your kids.
Yeah, our kids are now second and fifth grade. And when we were discerning to plant, they were 1 and 4, not even.
Like turned 1 and 4 during that 6 months.
Yeah. So in the discernment phase, we were really still feeling pretty shepherded by our home church. We've planted 3 hours away from our sending church. And we loved our small group. We loved all the support system we had as a young family with young kids. That was huge. So discerning, there were a couple of roadblocks. One of them was financially. We had gone to one of those church planting boot camps with the Vineyard. And one of the things that was brought up was debt and how you shouldn't plant with debt. And from the beginning, God started using our kids in the discernment process, even though our youngest was 3.
Our oldest was 3.
Our oldest was 3. And I was crying because as I was discerning, you know, how would he deal with this debt? Should we leave ministry, go get a better job and try to pay off some of this debt? Somebody in our church gave me a very large financial gift and said, no, you're not supposed to leave ministry. You're supposed to go on. And I was weeping pretty hard. And at the same time, trying to rock our 3-year-old daughter to sleep. And that didn't work out very well. As I was rocking her, she was on my chest, and I'm crying, and she, while she's on my chest, says, "Daddy, why are you crying?" And I said, "Because I think Jesus is taking care of us." And at that moment, she gets up off my chest, raises her arms up in the air, and says, "Yes, God is a great big God, and he takes care of us," thanks to the wonderful youth, children's ministry we had at the Ascending Church. And at that moment, I'm thinking, all right, God, you're trying to talk to me here. You're a great big God. You take care of me. But before I could even process the thought, she takes her hand, puts it on my forehead, and says, "And God's going to take care of you too, Daddy." Mm. And it broke my heart, but it led to a discernment question that I had had later with who would become my spiritual director. And he asked me the question, "So what would you do if you knew that God was going to take care of you?" So the Holy Spirit had used her, even though she was three, to engage this really core question of were we going to adventure with God? Were we going to risk? Were we going to risk this home, church, wonderful support system, amazing pastors, and really second family? Were we going to do that? What would you do if you knew that God was going to take care of you? It became a core question, and it was led by our three-year-old.
That's awesome. I love how that is. This conversation can include how our kids can actually be involved integrally in the process, not just how do we survive with them, right? And how do we make it through with them sort of attached or, you know, on the back burner of all this calling that we have. And that's such a wonderful story. And now knowing her as a few years older, I love just watching you interact with her and knowing that that story was sort of pretty integral in the church starting on. So, folks, there is more of that to come. If Este says, "Wow," as a wonderful response in the chat window. You guys, we are so excited that you're here. A bunch of new folks joined us even as we were getting going. So we have a call-in listener. Welcome from the phone. We see Anna Ackerman there and Chris Honus. Clarette, we see you with us. We also see Ryan Rubin and Terry and Liz Powell. Welcome, everybody. Feel free to open up your chat window, say hi, and ask any of the questions in the Q&A function. As we keep going here, I want to share a resource with you all. So for the rest of the time, we're going to really be kind of focusing in on how do we do this well? What are the key things that are going to be able to, like John was just talking about, kind of include our kids into the ministry, include our kids into what's happening. And we're drawing on some old Vineyard teaching from none other than Eleanor Mumford. We got this old talk from 1999. It's the Vineyard USA pastor's talk, and it's Eleanor as just wonderfully preaching and teaching on how do we do family life well. And so kind of our buckets of like what we're going to talk about are just drawn right from Eleanor. If you don't know who Eleanor Mumford is, you might have heard of her son or one of her sons. One's an academic, the other's a rock star with Mumford and Sons. And they talk about those kids and they're like kids. So she's talking about it and they're kids in the moment. And it's very 90s. It's like, it's a wonderful trip back. If you like 90s nostalgia, check out Eleanor's talk. It's really wonderful. So as she begins and as we're going to begin, the theme of sort of reviewing your own history came up to really look back and say, what did God bring you out of in your own family? Or in your current family, what's the kind of things that he's doing? And that is going to be a healthy thing. So, John, I want to go to you first, just in talking about when you were thinking about planting, it was actually pretty important for you to make peace with and figure out, well, the family that you came from influences the family that you're creating and the church that you're leading right now. Tell us more.
Yeah, both sets of my parents are PKs. Both my grandfathers were pastors, and being from that background, I grew up having an expectation that we knew what was going on behind the scenes in churches, and so everything was talked about, and typically in a very, like, difficult way. Like, we knew the difficult stuff that was going on, so when we think about our history in the church and where we're coming from and family dynamics that way, a thing that we had to reconcile was, well, you know, That stuff is difficult. And so what does it look like to go forward, even though we have this kind of hard history of expectations that it's hard. It's hard behind the scenes. What does that look like? It had to be reconciled, right?
And just also just having recognizing there are other models. Like, right, when you're only living in that one model, and then needing to see healthier models and interactions of people, that there are those difficult times, that it doesn't have to be the whole story.
Yeah.
And David, when we were talking, you were talking a little bit about sort of family systems theory, and you've been reading about that lately. That's been a lot of your work as of late. How is that? Kind of tell us a little bit about what that is, and then how that's influenced your ministry.
Well, a big part of that is learning to differentiate yourself from maybe the status quo, the family that you're used to. And I really relate it to the church that we were a part of. It was not a vineyard church. It was a large church. We loved that church, but at the same time, we wanted to do something new that was different. And one of those things was being co-pastors. That was different. And the hard thing was, is we didn't have an example of what that looked like. And so we had to kind of figure it out ourselves through trial and error. The other thing is we really embraced the vineyard values. And that was different than the church that we had come from. And so it was difficult to kind of differentiate ourselves from that. The lead pastor of the church that we came from was very influential in my life. So I would always hear his voice in the back of my head. And that was difficult to realize that he was an incredible benefit to me, but also that we wanted to do things maybe a little bit different than our sending church.
Yeah. Lissa, what would you add, sort of thinking about that family systems is, you know, sort of, you know, that the how you change the temperature when you walk into the room, right? And you know, when he was talking about the status quo, you sort of know that and can be disconnected from it. How has that influenced you sort of as a mother and as a pastor?
Well, I think the most important thing as we think about planting churches or even just leading our families is being and doing what God has asked us to do and being who he's asked us to be. And as we step out and plant churches, we aren't quite as aware maybe of how those influences that we've had prior to the planting are going to impact what we do and choose not to do. So it's just really good to be aware of what those influences have been, the spoken expectations that come with that, the roles, and just be aware.
That's great. So there's been some great questions coming in. Everybody, Pam McBride is currently winning the questions war right now. She's got three in, the first three. Thank you, Pam. And Liz also just jumped in with a question. Thank you, Liz. Open up your Q&A window and then send those over to us. I want to bring up one of Pam's questions here. She says, what or how much do you share with your kids about what is going on, about the difficulties of ministry, et cetera? John, your story at the beginning was sharing that with your daughter, Gabri, like, hey, here's what's going on, to a four-year-old, right? So how she could understand. How have you processed that? Like, how much you share or don't share with your kids?
Yeah, I think as parents, we deal with this all the time, right? If there's something stressful in the news or something in the family happens, what age-appropriate thing do we share in order for to help the children understand but not give them a burden that, you know, they shouldn't be carrying? And so similarly with anything that's going on in the church, depending on how old they've been through the journey, we share what hurts us and what doesn't. You know, not to bring up names in the church and that kind of stuff, we don't want to create division, but we're not afraid of crying in front of them. I think that's been a thing that helps us train them to what healthy faith looks like. In this movement especially, it's all about relationship. And if you're going to have healthy relationship, it's all about vulnerability. So what does it mean to take that risk and vulnerability to an age-appropriate level with your kids? That's for us what I think the journey's been like. You can add, I don't know.
Think of something later, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And we're going to be transitioning into just talking a little bit about calling. And so I'm going to come to Liz, your question, in a sec here. Before we do, I want to share a couple of resources. We've been talking a lot about family systems. That might be new language for people. So I'm going to send over two books that seem to be kind of the front end, like here's good spots to start. Arlita, you've read this one, I believe. It's The Leader's Journey. You and John, I know, have referenced this a little bit. you've talked a little bit about just sort of like being a student of this kind of stuff, and like there's not one book that's going to fix everything, but actually learning. Why? How has that been helpful for you as a mom and a pastor to sort of always be reading and learning about all this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I haven't read The Leader's Journey yet. It's on my list, as well as the next one you're going to send, generation to generation. But what, just learning, like the school our children attend, it's a public school, but they're doing a lot of emotional intelligence stuff and growth mindset, and really spending a lot of time teaching the kids about like real life, as opposed, like, we can get facts from the internet. We don't necessarily need the teachers in the same way as we used to need them for our fact learning. But like how to learn about grit, like our second grader, our son, is coming home with like, what does grit mean? Perseverance, optimism. It's really great life tools and lessons that I feel are super applicable to church planting, as well as boundaries. Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership is a great book, and just different books that I can learn about myself and my own following of Jesus, but as well as just how to have really good, healthy communication within our family, and recognizing, like, again, the family we came from, and what did our family do well in our family of origin, and then what do we want to change and do differently going forward. And so I constantly telling my kids, like, I'm never done learning. Like, there's always more to learn and grow in, and not because like I feel insecure, but just that there's just a plethora of knowledge and information, and I want to glean from everybody. So
yeah, that's awesome. And that, I mean, that is leadership, right? To continue to be growing and learning is how you stay thriving in leadership for the long haul. So that's so good. Jeff also says, hey, some more family system stuff. Come from the Bowen theory and Dr. Peter Steinke. Absolutely, Jeff. And I think some of these books even reference that. David, you said generation to generation was a key one that you found really helpful. Real quick, in just a couple sentences, what was helpful about that book for you?
Well, there's so many dynamics that are taking place in our family and within the church, and oftentimes we don't understand what's going on. And I think after you read more about family systems, then you begin to understand the dynamics and actually how to deal with them. So I think that is really crucial. I wish we would have known more about it even early on. Steinke's books are great. I think there's like maybe three or four of them that really relate directly to the church. And I think it's really helpful.
Wonderful. So as we shift gears just a little bit, we want to talk about calling. So we talked about sort of family background and systems as pretty integral. Also, the callings that we're talking about here, being a parent is a calling in and of itself, and so is pastoring and planting. Hinmans, I'd like to hear from you guys about sort of recognizing your own calling and how you flesh that out, because partially I know as you were leaving the church, there was, Lissa, you were really feeling, hey, I'm called to be a pastor, and you weren't sort of seeing that modeled. And Liz had asked a question here, which was, what's a good model for co-pastoring with young children? So in all of that, I think we just want to hear, like, what was your story in how you were figuring out your calling along the way?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when David and I were dating before we ever got married, we both knew that we were called to plant a church and pastor at some point. And it was 10 to 14 years down the road into our marriage when we were given this opportunity to plant. And prior to that time, I had done some ministry work, but more as a lay person in the church, because my focus was with our three kids at home. So that was what I felt like I was supposed to do in that particular season. And I think it's important to realize that we do transition in seasons of life, and that everyone is at a different place with their walk with the Lord. And it's individual. We need to seek Him and know what that season of time is in our lives, and the role that we're supposed to take or not take. So when the church plant came along, we really felt like this was something that we were to do together. So as we stepped into that role, we had never been senior leaders before. And I think both of us were growing in our identity as a pastor, learning our strengths and weaknesses, and becoming more aware of who we were as leaders. So as the church was growing, I would say we were also growing. That was interesting. That was interesting.
Yeah, to see how your callings kind of fit together. I mean, I think it's definitely a God thing. There was things that I could do maybe that, well, very few things that I could do that Lissa couldn't. But there are things that she could do that I definitely knew that I was not gifted at. Even though you feel like you're carrying many hats initially, eventually your calling kind of comes to convergence. Your calling within the church, but also how you interact with your kids. There's things that Lissa was great at, and there's things that I was more a part of.
That's so great, you guys.
Yeah.
Arlita, go ahead. You were going to jump in there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just with calling, it was really important, as John explained, our initial experience and asking the question, like, what would we do if God would take care of us? It was really important that we both had heard from the Lord as we were processing the call to plant. Like, he was super gung-ho initially about planting, and I flat out said no. And so he prayed and worked on me for like 2 years. And God obviously ultimately did this talking. But I don't think necessarily this question came to us before we planted, but in the journey in the last 6.5 years of planting, I don't know if we'll ever not feel like we're planting, but the measure of success is obedience to Jesus. And so if Jesus has asked us to do something, we are successful if we follow through. Like, are we faithful to what he's asked us to do? And we still say that to ourselves a lot. We say that to our leadership team. We say it to each other. If John's feeling discouraged from a meeting he had, I'll say, well, were you faithful to ask what God asked you to do? And he said, yes. Like, then, okay. Like, maybe you could change your manner or whatever, but like, you were faithful to what he asked you to. And so we say that to ourselves a lot, and it's really helped us kind of persevere through adversity and a lot of hard times. And also, I think it's allowed us to see a lot of great things as well, because we didn't throw in the towel too soon, whatever. So
I think it can help you create some healthy boundaries with your family as well. Oftentimes, as a planter, you always feel like you're never doing enough, and so you can throw your family under the bus pretty easily to overrun them and do too much. But if we get closer to Jesus and ask him, Jesus, what is it that you're asking me to do? And that would be the measure of success. If we can feel satisfaction in his love in response to that, instead of getting satisfaction from the thing, it helps create some safe zones around the family.
That's great, you guys. I'm going to send over just a couple more resources for everybody around this bigger conversation around calling. So Multiply Vineyard, we are wanting and hoping to resource people in this conversation specifically. And so first I'm sending over a link that gives you access to some free online courses. There are many courses that you can dive into that really can help unpack and help discern your calling for you. And then the other is just a little kind of 10 question. It's the front end of the discernment process. In the process that Arlita helps manage for all of our church planters. And actually, somebody on this call, Tracy Hess, Tracy, you filled this out this morning. That's so awesome. So she filled out those 10 questions of just, hey, here's a few things that we want to hear your thoughts on of these 10 questions. I call them the 10 questions that can change your life. And so we would love to hear some of your thoughts there. Feel free to click there or go through one of the courses. If you're wondering about, well, hey, what does my calling look like? And how does that differ as I'm thinking about sort of parenting and pastoring with my spouse and all that kind of stuff? These are helpful kind of starting place resources for that. Let's spend a little bit of time, you guys, talking now about marriage. Because as you're planting, that's one thing you're doing together. You're also parenting together. And then you're also trying to be a, you know, caring, loving, married couple together, not just doing those things next to your spouse, right? So Lissa, tell us a little bit about, like, how did you refresh your marriage? How did you guys stay vibrant in your relationship while all this other stuff was going on? While you're getting kids to, you know, practices when they're in grade school and high school, and also trying to pastor a church. You know, that's a lot. Tell us about how you and David figured that out.
How we figure that out. Okay, good question.
Give us all the answers, because you've done it. You figured it out.
Right. You know, I think realizing if you're in partnership together, if you're in ministry together, I think it's really important to have like a regular kind of business meeting where you talk about business issues in the church and keep that separate from your relationship. We tried to spend, regular date time where it was one-on-one, took some retreats.
Yeah. One of the things that we realized that when you're taking dates or getting away together, you have to go outside of your community. Because we'd go to a restaurant or something, and we always see like three or four people that knew us. And it was really helpful to get outside of that context. And then our kids were also very involved in sports. And that was a great way of just kind of disconnecting and being associated with a whole another group of people, especially other parents. And so we took advantage of that as being a time to just connect one-on-one, but also with our kids.
Yeah. And I think too, family and your marriage is first and foremost before the ministry or the church that you're planting. One thing that I really learned as we were planting the church, I'd always read a lot about spiritual warfare, but didn't really experience it as being as real as it was until we were planting the church. And what I saw that was that in our personal lives, in our relationship with one another, or even in the church, wherever there seemed to be a weak area, that's really where the enemy tried to attack us and derail us from what we were trying to do, because he didn't want us to succeed as individuals. He didn't want our marriage to succeed, our family life to succeed. He didn't want the church to succeed. So just really important to be the best person, the healthiest person that God has created you to be. And I can't stress more that is just so important, is to just learning to surrender to him in all areas of your life, so that you can hear his voice and be obedient to the things that he's nudging you and the places that he wants to take you personally. Mm-hmm. So
that's really good. And just honest about how when the enemy is going to come in is when you're trying to do this kind of stuff, right? And it was when you're committed to advancing the kingdom. And so immediately any of those areas of your character or your marriage or your family, the enemy is going to come in and attack that. And the spiritual warfare thing is going to be just so present, so real.
I think, too, I would just add to that mobilizing a team of people outside of the church to pray for you is vital.
That's good. John, you talked about that as well, sort of like building in support structures to be healthy. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, to David's point, beginning with a email list of people that I knew that I could trust outside of the church for prayer support, an accountability partner. I know you're going to share a resource, Justin, for good accountability questions, but having a weekly accountability partner that you're completely vulnerable with. The Vineyard's great at offering coaches. There's resources for spiritual directors. But who are the people in your life? I think I would ask this question when it comes to having healthy family life and planting. Who are the people in your life that are going to ask you the vulnerable questions, the ones that you're actually going to answer honestly? When was the last time you guys had sex? How's it going parenting? Are you guys connecting? That are really going to be concerned about the health and vitality of your marriage and family before they're concerned about numbers. Oh, how many people did you have at church on Sunday? No, I need somebody in my life that's going to be primarily concerned about me, my marriage, and the way that I'm relating to my kids. And if those pieces are in place, it allows us, I think, as pastors and planters, to focus on the main and the plain. What the healthiest kind of ministry comes out of people who are healthy. So what does it look like to have a healthy soul, healthy person, healthy identity, healthy marriage, healthy family, and then out of the overflow of that, healthy ministry, instead of thinking about all the productivity first and having to react and to family that gets in the way of all the wonderful ministry that's going on that might destroy your family life and marriage.
Preach, John. Preach. So good. folks, if you want a little more kind of discussion around like just healthy married life and church planting, we did a whole webinar that was really focused in on marriage and church planting with some great planters who have been sent out recently, as well as with Kurt Attaway. Kurt Attaway is our kind of marriage support specialist with Multiply Vineyard. He's a pastor down in Pearland, Texas, and also a marriage and family therapist. And just Kurt has a ton of resources for that. And I would invite you to just either reach out to him or check out that webinar. There's some links and follow-up resources in that as well. And those would be some great places, because we know, just as we've been talking about, when you press into this stuff, the enemy is going to press back. It's going to be hard. And so we have people on, like John was saying, on your side to help work through it along the way. Let's spend the rest of our time, you guys, talking really specifically and practically about how to reinforce your own family, how to kind of like do this well. And some of the questions that are coming in are that, right? They're the nitty gritty, okay, we have kids and we're doing it, or we're about to get launched out to do it. And now what? Now, how do we stay healthy? I'm going to start with Tracy's question. She just says this: how does soul care and work-life balance look when you are planting, working full-time, and raising a young family? I mean, that's the $1,000 question here, Tracy. How do you do it? And not that there's any one given quick fix, but Lissa, would you just tell us a little bit about, with you guys, what did that look like? What did it start to look like to balance all those things well, to care for you and your family well in the process?
Okay. Well, that was one thing that was really great about the sending church that we had, is they really taught us the importance of placing boundaries and realizing that we're human. And like God says, take a Sabbath, and that we needed a day off and that we needed time away. And so they were real proponents of that. And so as we planted the church, we realized that we weren't supposed to be everything to everybody. And we planted the church with the idea that we knew that there was going to be growth. And we were also, even though we were growing in our own leadership and who we were as leaders and pastors, we had a pretty good idea that we still weren't supposed to be doing everything. So we set structures in place to gather a team around us, and we quickly started delegating things and releasing people, because we knew that we weren't supposed to be out every night with every crisis that came our way. We knew that we needed a down day on the weekend where we could just focus on our family. And we really worked hard to know that, the ministry needs were always going to be there, but it was really important that our family felt that they were special and that we made time out for them. You know, we had dinners. We allowed our kids to pursue activities that were outside of the church, if that was their place of interest. We made traditions as a family, especially, around the holidays and different times where church activity could be really, really all-consuming. But we knew that our family was important.
Yeah. I mean, can I just add something real quick, Justin? One thing that Lissa touched on was having dinner together. And Lissa always made that a priority. I mean, it was like at least four times a week we would say, we're doing dinner together as a family, because that's when a lot of interaction took place. And then I would just say one other thing is, enjoy hanging out with your kids and your family more than you enjoy doing ministry. Just enjoy it. Have fun. Let them know that that's more fun for you than ministry.
That's good. John and Arlita, what comes to mind as you guys think about kind of just those healthy practices that you've had to put in place for your family?
I think communication is key. Our kids are now in second and fifth grade, but like really dialoguing with them a lot about how it's impacting them. Our church doesn't have its own building, and so a lot of stuff happens at our house or in other locations. And sometimes that, like, our son is a homebody, and so a couple weeks ago he shared like he was frustrated. We were doing a special small group for 1 month, and he wasn't going to be going home until like bedtime, and he left for school at 7 o'clock in the morning. And so he expressed that was hard for him. And We had a conversation about it and validated his feelings and said, well, look, we'll think about this again in the future, like apologized. And we homeschooled them for 3 years and they're back in school this year. And so when they were homeschooled, we had family fun day on John's Sabbath day. It was Fridays. And so we would, some days it would just be us hanging out, watching movies at home. Other days we would go to the river. We live pretty close to the Texas Hill Country, so we could just drive 20, 30 minutes and get to a state park and spend the day out from away from technology and just kind of enjoying each other's company. Now it's like that our son loves to wrestle and tackle John in the living room for a half hour. And like that brings him joy, so that's what we do. And just really just kind of listening to them and their day and spending time with them. It's really kind of really what we focus on now. I think someone else had mentioned, asked about like the family balance and working. Like I work from home for Multiply Vineyard and we homeschooled and we were church planting and I was leading the kids ministry. And I think at some point you have to decide like in each day or each given week, like I'm going to give more of my energy to this thing than the other thing. And ultimately I want my kids to know and love Jesus as adults. And so I'm going to probably spend a little more energy doing that than I did homeschooling. Like we were probably more unschoolers than, some people would be comfortable with, because I valued them as people more than what they were learning in the traditional sense. And so we just had the flexibility to do that. But I had to learn to let things go and not everything was going to look super polished and perfect. And I was going to do the best I could for that given day.
That's great. John, you've talked a little bit about kind of the need to repent with your kids, like, and just being really vulnerable. You said that before, and dive back into that again, because I felt like that was such a, you just keep coming back to this theme of vulnerability and how that's so helpful to, that leads the kids into this thing and not just thinking parents are untouchable along the way.
Yeah, Arlita spoke to it a little bit. We really had to take some time and apologize and then get forgiveness from our son for driving his day too far. And we often repent to our kids because we make mistakes authentically and they recognize them. And as they get older, they tell us more. And so we teach them that we recognize that behavior can change the next day, that I can apologize for what's going on today, and I need forgiveness from you in order for us to be truly reconciled. They get to practice that at school. It's unusual for some of their friends. But that vulnerability aspect, I think, for us, not only trains them in a lifestyle that we want reproduced as disciples, that's what we want for our staff, that's what we want for our church, to continue in that vulnerability, because as long as we continue to be vulnerable, ask for forgiveness, then we can repent a lot and find reconciliation in powerful ways and change and be transformed. And that's what we're all about. So if we're teaching our kids that as models, hopefully they'll catch that and be able to, we'll be able to have that kind of lifestyle in the home and then as an overflow to the church.
Yeah. And just to jump off that, Jerry asked a question that's kind of connected to this, right? That your kids are then in school and people see this, right? And people like they're, wow, these kids are like asking for forgiveness with their friends. And like, that's unique. That's missional by nature. Jerry asked the question, what do you tell your kids to answer the question of what their parents do? Like, what do your parents do? They're pastors, they're church planters. What's that experience been like as your kids have now just went into public school for the first time?
I don't know what they say, actually. They might say that we pastor the church. The school they go to is in the neighborhood of the church, but we meet at the Children's Museum, and so we don't have a physical location for people to know that it exists any other time other than Sunday. They might say that.
I think they probably understand that they're in the same boat. Like, we're planting a church. Like, my parents are the pastor. My dad's a pastor. My mom's a pastor, whatever. But it is a family identity, I think, thing. And I don't think for the negative. What I love about David's story is the longevity of ministry that begins. Like, there can be negatives to be PKs, but there's a lot of positives too. Like, there's training in the home for ministry. And I think our kids are becoming naturally supernatural missionaries, living missional lifestyles. They've adopted hey, this is our life. This is what we're doing. We're in, even as second and fifth graders, in whatever capacity that can handle that in.
They're getting actually like a doctorate in ministry by right. being in their homes. And I had talked to you guys earlier and basically said there's a reason why a lot of kids get involved in ministry. And my son was years ahead of me with regards to his maturity and his just missional ministry skills. But what I tell people, just tell them that your parents oversee a large nonprofit organization. I'm joking here, but the hard thing is there's stereotypes that people have with regards to you know, my parents are pastors.
David and Lisa, you guys experienced, and you talked a little bit around the dynamic of like, there was expectations put on your kids just in the church itself, in the church plant. Tell us a little bit about that and how you guys work through other people's expectations. Like, we've just been talking about like really healthy expectations of kids being involved. And then there might be sometimes people in your church who have not so healthy expectations for what a pastor or a pastor's kids look like.
Yeah. Well, I want to preface that by saying, you know, at a young age, we encouraged our kids to be participants in the church in whatever way, shape, or form that they could. And as parents, you know, it's our job to train the children, our children, in the way that they should go. And that's an individual walk and calling for each individual child. And no sibling in a individual family, that call is the same. And so, you know, each of the kids were encouraged to get involved in the church in a way that they not only could physically, but also that they had interest. But we also discerned that for some of our children, they maybe did have a calling to someday be a part of ministry on a full-time capacity, where others of our children, we felt that they would probably have a calling more in the marketplace and need training to get a job in that arena. And so we were really sensitive to that. And so in the process, you know, we made our life more than just church. And if the kids had interests to pursue outside of church, we allowed them to do that. And we made it a priority to do that. So when it came to our expectations for the children ourselves, it was more or less like, you know, we're called as a family, so let's figure out how we can serve together.
That's good.
Because serving is what we do as we follow the Lord.
And it's interesting because they still have that DNA. Whatever church they're a part of, they said serving is what you do. But the hard thing is that a lot of people have expectations of your kids that are unrealistic because they're pastor's kids, because they're PKs. And that was difficult at times because people would maybe tell us something that our kids did. You know, they didn't greet us or they didn't hug us, you know, when we came in the door. And so we had to really walk our kids through that and process it with them because people have expectations of pastor's kids that are unrealistic.
Mm-hmm. And our kids were good kids. I mean, they, we didn't have any major issues with them, but we also didn't expect them to be perfect. But we realized that other people did. And every once in a while, they would say things to us that someone had said to them where they felt that expectation. And so it was really important for us to not just allow them to be human inside of our home, but to also find places outside of our home and outside of the church where they could maybe share honestly, talk about things that they were feeling and experiencing, and totally be themselves without any pressure to be somebody that they were not.
Yeah. And what I wanted to add one real quick thing too is our son especially had mentors outside of myself that were men that he would spend time with and just talk to. And I helped even to kind of mobilize that, initiate that, but he spent a lot of time with other men that were very mature in their walk with God. And that was kind of a cool thing that took place.
That's great. So Tracy asked a question. I'm going to come over to the Aurelies here. She was asking just like around, how do you make the decision around education for your children as tied into church planting? So how did church planting impact how you thought about parenting and educating your kids?
I think it changes in seasons and also depends on your kids and the city you live in. Some of the public schools here, the one that our daughter was first in, was super high intensity and very driven academically from the get-go. And so our daughter felt behind in first grade. And so when we moved closer into the city, we decided to homeschool because her personality wouldn't have survived public school. Just the intensity was too great for her. And we liked the flexibility of homeschooling. It limited how much we could meet people, though. And if you're church planting, you need to be out where the people are. And I work for Multiply Vineyard from home, and John pastors, you know, at coffee shops and around the city. But so we just felt like we just kind of every year we would reevaluate. And last January, a year ago, we felt like maybe it was time to investigate. And we had developed a relationship with the school that's in our neighborhood, but the neighborhood of our church, not the neighborhood we live in. And we really liked what they were doing in the school. And so we still were willing to continue homeschooling, even though it probably wasn't helping us in church planting, because our children really came before that in terms of their education and their building up of them as people was more important. But we really felt comfortable with the school and their models of education. And so that's why we decided to go that route. Private schools or Christian schools could work for people, but the cost was a hindrance. And also in San Antonio, at least, there's strong just cultural Christian boundaries that we didn't necessarily feel would necessarily match with what we were trying to do as a church. And there aren't very many vineyard churches in San Antonio or even in this part of Texas. And so our approach to the kingdom and stuff like that is just different. So it just felt we would probably have to walk through a lot of barriers, even in a Christian school.
Maybe more in the Christian school than in the public school. And we co-discerned with the kids as well. We talked to them about it. We prayed through it with them and then gave them a day at the school and said, you know, let this day for you be a place where you're praying. And when you come home, let's talk about it, pray about it again. And it was an all-in thing.
And I liked how you guys said too, that there wasn't this like, oh, we got to get our kids in the school so that they'll meet new families, right? And sort of using them as this tool, right? You said, hey, like, we want to know what's best for them, how they're going to learn best, how we're going to build them up. Like, there's a lot there that's just being great parents first, and let Jesus build his church, right? Like, let him be the faithful one to help it grow. That's really great, you guys. Tell us a little bit about Sabbath. I'd love to hear this from both folks. There's a lot of questions in here around just like, how do you make it all work? And how do you do that and take time for Sabbath? What were just a couple like helpful practices, or what are a couple helpful practices for you guys working full time, pastoring, planting, and parenting? How do you find time for Sabbath? We'll go to the Hinmans first.
That's a hard thing. Much easier now that we're empty nesters, but I think just having fun with, you know, your family, just having fun and planning fun times to hang out. My dad really modeled that well with our family. He was a school administrator. He was really busy, but we knew that having fun as a family was the most important thing in his life. And it's hard though, because, you know, Saturday night, you start thinking about Sunday morning. And I think I had to work really hard because I wanted to do my, you know, message tuning on Saturday night. But I realized basically from Friday night at, you know, 5 o'clock till Sunday night, or Saturday night to 5 o'clock, was the Sabbath time. But it was hard. It was definitely a hard thing to make happen.
Yeah. And we tried really hard to have, I know a lot of families nowadays kind of make fun of it and they don't do it anymore, but we had the Sunday afternoon dinner as a family, and that was a time where we often included extended family. We've been blessed that as we moved to Arizona a long time ago, a lot of our family followed us. And so, you know, we used Sunday afternoons whenever we could, when there wasn't something scheduled that we needed to do with the church, to have that family afternoon dinner and include as many extended relatives as we could. So
that was great. Now that they've all moved to Arizona, it's time to move to another state.
John and Arlita, I want to hear a little bit about kind of who you're focusing on. Russell asked a question about when starting the church, kind of who you focus on to target, right? And we hear this a lot around church planning, is you're going to attract people like you. If you have kids, you're going to attract families. So both, how do you focus in on people like that and sort of draw in people like you that are in a similar stage? And also, how do you not forget about other folks who you also want to be a part of the church? You don't want the church to look like one demographic, one monolithic. The church is this diverse experience of God's kingdom, the sign of the already, not just the not yet. How have you guys thought about that, right, in your town and thinking about that in San Antonio?
I think there's a difference between going after people and valuing people. If you authentically value people, you're going to go after them naturally. So I love having men that are older than me that I can go and talk to, that I can process with, even if they're not believers. Tell me your story. How did you raise your kids? What did you do with that? And so for me, it was easy to go after those guys. And then naturally, you know, their spouses and that kind of stuff. And then on the other side, really valuing young adults. What's going on in culture? How are you guys negotiating what it means to follow Jesus in the midst of postmodernistic ideas and all this kind of stuff? I really want to be there. I value them for where they're at. And so being near to universities, having those conversations, naturally wanting to call them and text them and say, you know, what's going on? And how are you, you know, what are you thinking about this story and all that? It's it became a natural thing for me. About people like us, though, it meant including the whole family. And that became, all right, how do we do this together? And I think I asked you to take a lot of the lead there.
Okay. I don't know.
Like having other families over and all that.
Yeah, I think we just, I think that it's hard. Like there have been times I've heard people are, you know, attend a church, but they don't go back because it's just one demographic. And we never stay one demographic. Like we are always, we keep aging. And so I don't want to be with other parents that have 8 and 11 year olds because I'm in that. I mean, I don't mind it some, but I want to be with people who don't have any kids. I want to be people who like the Hinmans. Like I want to like, can I sit with you for 5 hours and find out how to have a 26 year old child who's church planting training? Like that sounds like I want to give me more of that. And so, you know, we have the things in our church with the kids ministry. It's not like huge bells and whistles like some of the larger churches can do. So we have the value of there are going to be people who come to have young kids. But there's also lots of singles on both ends of the spectrum. We have a lot of singles who are either divorced or widowed or never married that are in the 60, 70 range. And then we have young adult singles and everything between. And so we value people and find a lot of life in what they're living and just ask them questions and want to like learn from them.
Yeah. I felt like I was learning a lot from my kids. As we got older, our kids helped us to be, to continue to be culturally relevant, especially for younger people. And I remember a lot of times my son would say, Dad, that's not cool. You need to change this. And so he became my consultant as far as how to relate to the younger generations.
That's great, you guys. Folks, we are, I wish we had more time today. This has been so rich and so good, and I'm just so thankful that the Arellis, you guys were willing to spend the time with us and just continue to kind of say what it's like with these young kids, right, and doing this planting. Thank you guys for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
And Hinmans, thanks for leading the way and having kids that have gone before. You've sent them out. You've done this well. And you're in this wonderful stage of being empty nesters. And you are also some of the most missional people I know that it's like not done when your kids have moved out, right? Like there is this new season now that I keep hearing you talk about, which is even though our parenting life has changed, you are also very, very focused on God's still doing stuff in our life. We are in a new season where God can really be focused. So thank you guys for doing that and being who you are.
Thanks.
Thank you,
Justin.
Yeah. Marianne just asked one more question. She said, hey, is the webinar recorded? I missed the beginning. Yes. Don't worry, everybody. We're recording all this, and we'll send this along with all the other resources out to you by the end of the week. I want to share just two last things before we pray and jump off the call here. One is we have regional reps in your area in the U.S. We know we have a few folks joining us internationally. So we don't have folks internationally on the Multiply Vineyard team, but Vineyard Missions does have partnerships all over the globe. So connect with Vineyard Missions office at vmteam.org if you do want to connect with somebody internationally. If you want to connect with somebody regionally here in the U.S., jump on our little link here. It says multiplyvineyard.org/our team, and you'll see basically all of these beautiful faces. For folks that are serving regionally, so John, you're in the South Central. David, you guys are in the Southwest. You know, we want to have somebody close to sort of talk through some of this stuff. We even didn't get to some of our questions today because there were so many good ones that really deserve a phone call or a face-to-face or sit down and have coffee and sort of, here's my situation. What do you think? Let's coach through it and let's talk through it. So if we didn't get to your question, we're sorry, but that we want to make sure you have somebody to ask those questions to. And then also, if all of this is really interesting to you, if you're really kind of wondering, well, hey, maybe I could be in on this, we want to get you connected with Arlita because she works people through the whole process of planting a church. And one easy way to do that is email her. I'm going to send over her email here, as well as our link for the church planter application. Now that might be sort of a little further down the road to fill out the application. So let's keep talking as we go. But if you're really feeling like, hey, this could be one of my next steps, I'm feeling really called to this. We do have kind of the application, which is really that first big starting point for saying, all right, I want to get into a process to be launched out, to be sent from the Vineyard. Thank you guys so much. We love all the stuff that you're doing. And I'm going to, John's telling me to send these links publicly, so I'll do that here. I only sent them to our panelists, which isn't helpful. They already have that. But as I do that, Arlita, would you just pray for us kind of as we close and all of these parents and pastors and planters who are on the call with us?
Heavenly Father, I thank you, Lord, for the opportunity to share about our journey and our story. And I pray, Lord, for the panelists, yes, but also for the attendees, God, that you would just be the loudest voice among all the others, God, calling them to adventure, to following you, Lord, and that you would give them the skills and tools they need, Lord, to invite their family into that and their kids, and that you would help us all just listen to you and look to you for our guidance and our next steps in each and every day. Lord, I ask for the remaining questions that we couldn't get to, that you would provide great spaces for those questions to be answered and walked out in relationship with others. We pray all these things in your name, Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Well, thank you, folks. Have a wonderful day, and we look forward to seeing you on the next webinar or via email as we go here. Thanks, folks.
Bye-bye.